astonishingly stable. That's how the man charged with modelling and predicting the course of coronavirus here has described the pattern of people contracting the virus, needing hospital treatment, intensive care, or dying from COVID-19 infection. The deaths of 9 more people have been reported in the last 24 hours here, bringing the toll to 1,639 people. Over half of those losses have been from people living in nursing homes. The government will decide late next week if more restrictions on our lives will be lifted, including moving up to 20 kilometres away from people's homes to see more people. Philip Nolan is chair of the NPHET Irish Epidemiological Modelling Advisory Group. We can speak to him now. Professor Nolan, good morning.
Morning, Gavin.
A number of weeks ago, when the reproductive rate, the number of people getting the infection from those who already had it, had been reduced, you said the prevalence of the disease was still too high. What do you think now?
Yes, indeed. What really matters here is what we call the force of infection, and that is the rate at which new cases are emerging in the population. And that's a product of the number of people out there with infection and this reproduction number that we're all familiar with now, how quickly those individuals are spreading it to others. So to ensure that the level of disease in the population remains very low, both of those parameters have to be low. You have to have a very low number of infections in the community, and you have to keep the reproduction rate at or below one. And if you keep it below one, the number of infections will ultimately decline to almost zero. So at this point in time, I did use those words, astonishingly stable. You can imagine the period immediately after the 18th of May was a period of some anxiety for the National Public Health Emergency Team, wanting and hoping that the people of Ireland would continue to be cautious and careful in how they went about their business and not spreading this disease. And over the last week to 10 days, all of the indicators suggest that there hasn't been a significant increase in the spread of the disease since the 18th of May. And that is a testament to the fact that the people of Ireland have learned how to begin to go about their business and not spread this virus.
Where is the disease now?
So the diseases are the disease. If you look at any given set of cases in a day, about half the cases are emerging as contacts of known cases, or isolated cases in the community, or cases in households, or cases in extended family. About a quarter are in healthcare workers. The incidence in healthcare workers is a tenth of what it was about a month ago, but they're still a high-risk group, and we need to do everything we can and have been doing everything we can to protect healthcare workers. And about a quarter are in the sort of outbreak settings, such as meat processing plants, and still some outbreaks in long-term residential care. So the cases, the low numbers of cases are emerging in a mix of settings, and it is going to be very important to watch infection prevention and control in workplace settings as more and more workplaces come back.
Much of the figures that you have been dealing with largely capture what was happening at the end of the lockdown. How will that prevalence change as we spend more time with more people?
Well, there's always going to be a risk. I mean, the spread of the disease in the population depends upon the number of contacts and how you reduce the risk of any given contact leading to infection. So for a long time into the future, we are going to have to limit our social and physical contacts to what's necessary for our well-being and for restarting the economy. So we'll always be thinking about how do we limit the number of contacts, and we'll always be thinking about how do we reduce the risk of infection by hygiene measures, by maintaining some level of distance when we have to come into contact with other people, by using face coverings where appropriate, and really importantly, by self-isolating as soon as we have any symptoms suggestive of this disease. All of these things come back to issues of individual responsibility, to us all behaving as if there's a risk we have the virus and being really conscious of not spreading it to anybody else. if we maintain those measures and if we use our testing and contact tracing, and by use I mean that if I develop symptoms, I immediately call my GP, get tested, and have my contacts traced. It is possible to, over time, in a cautious manner, rebuild many of our activities and not spark off further waves of infection. But I have to emphasize, any step forward we take does carry the risk and therefore requires constant monitoring of that risk of an unanticipated resurgence of the virus.
What about international experience, other countries who are further ahead of us in terms of their easing of restriction? For example, on countries who've eased social distancing, Denmark reduced their social distancing guidelines from 2 metres to 1 metre on May the 11th. And at that time, their daily case rate has fallen from 110 new cases on May the 11th to 27 new cases on May the 25th, 32 cases yesterday. And they have their schools open. How are you using international experience to predict what will happen here?
So, looking at it very carefully, as the Chief Medical Officer would have said in other contexts, we do constantly monitor what's going on in other countries. One of the things that surprises even the statisticians who understand this work very well is how long it takes for any given intervention, particularly the lifting of a restriction, to have an effect. It takes time for the disease to reemerge in the population. So, first of all, we need to give it time. The second thing is we need to be very careful. Even though we think of Western Europe as being relatively homogeneous, people behave, different countries have different cultures and different social structures. For instance, classrooms and school structures vary quite widely across Europe. So first of all, we need time. And secondly, we need to be careful of our interpretation of the results from other countries, because what happens in one context may emerge somewhat differently in another context. So very useful information, very useful evidence, very useful precedent. I just would urge two things: caution in terms of how quickly we jump to a conclusion, and then caution about how we consider the context in which, for instance, a Danish school or a Swedish school or a German school operates compared with how an Irish school operates. There are significant differences between those. But nonetheless, very valuable lessons to be learned, and therefore one of the kind of important aspects of this epidemic has been the level of collaboration across European nations, particularly through the European Centres for Disease Control, and how useful that information is collated and relayed back across the EU.
Philip Nolan, thank you very much for speaking to us, and hope to speak to you again soon. That's Philip Nolan, Chair of the National Public Health Emergency Team's Irish Epidemiological Modelling Advisory Group.